Middleton McGoodwin grew up in a wealthy white family on the coast of Massachusetts. He remembers his childhood fondly, rowing out to sea with his buddies to catch lobsters, then swimming away the afternoons. It was carefree, but isolated. He says his only exposure to people of color was when they would take class field trips into Boston and drive through some of the city's black neighborhoods.
It was like, oh, look at this. And I remember we were sort of at awe. Looking at the number of black people.
He grew up in the late 50s, early 60s, and though he may have been insulated from racial tensions behind school bus windows, as he grew older, those tensions were getting harder to ignore.
Direct from our newsroom in Washington, in color, this is the CBS Evening News.
In the spring of 1968, McGoodwin was a student at Boston University.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued.
And after that event, the next day, students of color would march from class to class as a group, like a football team marching out into the stadium, and they wanted no interaction with any people who were not black.
McGoodwin read anger on their faces, but he didn't understand why. Didn't understand why their anger seemed to be directed at him, at whites across the board. After all, he says, it was just one man who pulled the trigger. A couple of years went by, and McGoodwin became a teacher. He got his first job in a town outside of Boston, just as racial conflict in the city was nearing a breaking point.
I wouldn't care if they were green or purple with the idea of putting my kid on a bus when I had to.
Under court order, Boston began busing students to desegregate its schools.
It's supposed to be a free country.
But this, too, McGoodwin watched from a distance.
I only knew what was going on in Boston by what would be on television. They would talk about busing.
And in the country now, they're telling you to do this and do this now.
They'd talk about large groups of white residents of Boston concerned about their children being transported. I know that state police were in most of the schools in Boston maintaining order.
White families were starting to move into McGoodwin's mostly white district to avoid integration. He knew this, he says. He watched it, taught their kids, but he still didn't feel the race conflict had anything to do with him. And it definitely wasn't talked about in his school.
Absolutely no awareness about it and no discussion about it. We knew that there were certain words that were wrong, but there was no discussion about race.
McGoodwin eventually became principal. Decades went by, and he continued to move up in his career. Then, in 2011, he became superintendent of schools in Claremont, New Hampshire. It was late August of last year, his sixth year on the job, when he first heard that a young biracial boy in town had been attacked by teenagers.
I received a call from a local newspaper and wanted to know about a racial incident that took place at school. And I said to the correspondent, oh, school hasn't started yet. I don't know what you're talking about. And then a few days later, reading the paper, I knew what the person had been talking about.
Images of an 8-year-old with rope burns and neck bruising have gone viral.
Then it just went wildfire, wildfire.
His mother posted them, claiming two 14-year-old boys in Claremont, New Hampshire, tied a rope around her son's neck and pushed him off a picnic table.
I almost lost my grandson. I didn't know. I was confused. Children can be mean to other children. Sometimes just joking can lead into injury. But I initially started thinking about, well, you know, just bullying. It was just being mean to someone else.
And a lot of people had that response. It's just bullying. Were you surprised then by all the media coverage?
I was surprised. But what I did realize, how little I did know.
McGoodwin had no idea how to address the issue, how to move forward. But he started hearing from colleagues. One of them was a social studies teacher named Nancy Lewis. She's also white. I met up with her recently at Claremont's Stevens High School.
So when I emailed him, he immediately emailed me back.
It was still summer break when we met, and the school was vacant. We found an unlocked, echoey, empty classroom to talk.
So we met in a classroom about as hot as this one. And he said, what do you think we should do? And I said, well, I have no idea. This is, even though I'm a social studies teacher, you know, I'm supposed to have some sort of understanding beyond others about, you know, t- tolerance. And I think I expressed that to him. I said, you know, in many ways, I think the best thing we can do is acknowledge we don't know what we're doing. And he agreed entirely.
From a Goodwin, a man who'd had nearly 50 years working in education. This was the first time he was being asked to think critically about how race was affecting his students and their families. He started reading articles on the history of race in America, joined a community racial healing group, and he and Lewis gathered about 10 school colleagues for a reading and discussion series. That's what got him thinking back at his own life.
I was absolutely isolated. I was absolutely unaware. And when you're unaware and uninformed and have no contact, you base your decisions or judgments on a very, very small window of knowledge. And unintentionally, that can lead to what we call racism.
He started to reflect on the anger he saw on the black students' faces in 1968, he says, started to understand that it was rooted in far more than the singular killing of one black man. And he started to appreciate the symbolism of a group of white children hanging a black child by a rope. McGoodwin now sees educating young people about race as critical, especially in predominantly white areas.
Part of the responsibility in public education is to prepare our students not only to be able to read and write, but also to be able to help our culture and society grow and be a better place.
The experiences kids have in school as they're growing up are powerful, he says. And if districts don't take this seriously, they'll end up graduating more students who live lives unaware, like him. The problem is, while McGoodwin and a small group of colleagues were able to start educating themselves, they didn't get much farther than that. The school administration didn't plan formal trainings to reach the full staff, didn't make curricular changes. These are steps other districts have taken after similar events. And now McGoodwin's chance to shape school policy is over. He was ousted as superintendent several months ago after a bitter budget fight. The school board chair told me she's committed to addressing issues of race going forward, but according to the new interim superintendent, there's no concrete plans on the books. For NHPR News, I'm Brita Green.